morning and welcome to Speak Up for this Monday morning, May the 25th, 2026. Thanks for joining us here at CJSF and at Speak Up for our program today. We got some good stuff lined up for you today. We have an interview with an academic from UBC about AI addiction. We also have a feature from our reporter Danny on World Bee Day at the Honeybee Center. A report on the recent move by the BC Nurses Union to take a strike vote and move into a potential strike position in their negotiations with the provincial government on a new contract. Later on in the show, just past the half hour mark, we have Gardening with Embark. We're going to be talking about harvesting your spring crops and getting ready for your summer crops. Always so much to do in the garden. And of course, now that the weather's getting better, not today, of course, but generally speaking, those garden tasks get more and more. Peter R.H. will be here towards the end of the show with his talk. And we'll probably fit in some good music in there somewhere as well. All right. So a couple of weeks ago, we talked to about AI deepfakes with an SFU researcher. And this week, we're talking about AI addiction. AI is becoming more and more pervasive in our lives, our online lives at any rate, with the tools being put into just about everything you interact with on the internet these days, whether it's social media or your email or anything else. But AI chatbots are a particular flavor of them, and probably maybe you've tried them out, maybe you haven't. I've tried them a little bit for various things and used them to help me with certain things, summarize documents and get the answer to a question. But the engaging nature of AI chatbots can also present social issues and problems that have the features of addiction. And I'm going to talk to UBC grad student Karen Shen about this issue, and I think we'll be looking at more issues. We had folks here from CJSF at the Web Summit, which was, I think, just a little over a week ago, a big summit here in conference here in Vancouver, bringing people from all manner of sort of the web business, social media platforms, websites, apps, that whole thing. And of course, everybody's talking about AI in all those references. Our program coordinator, Jesse Wentzloff, went to our national conference for community radios, which this year, it's not usually how it works, but this year was held concurrently and as part of a larger radio conference for North America called Radio Days, which also brought together loads of commercial radio stations and particularly, leadership in the big companies that operate a lot of the commercial radio stations these days. And AI was one of the big topics there, how AI was going to, be the future of radio or commercial radio. And of course, there are huge, huge potentials to replace people and their salaries with AI bots. And in my own personal experience, I have a cousin in Norway who has had a career in radio for 30 plus years, and his regular show, him and his co-host were replaced by AI, even though a big part of their show was talking about the human experience and how people interact with the world. But I guess they figured an AI could do that. So AI is really showing up everywhere in our lives. And AI chatbots are a big part of that. You can ask them questions, you can get answers, you can make it generate an image for you. But it can also create perhaps not so healthy habits and parasocial relationships. And in this conversation with Karen Shen, who's a grad student in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Engineering at UBC, we get right into that issue. So here's my conversation with Karen.
I'm talking to Karen Shen, who's a doctoral student in UBC's Electrical and Computer Engineering Department. Thank you for joining us today. You've been looking into AI chatbots and how people interact with them and how some of these interactions can take on the aspects of addiction. Can you explain what you're looking into?
Yeah, of course. So we have found a non-trivial number of cases where users who use AI chatbots, so like ChatGPT or Claude, use them to an extent that results in functional impairment. So this includes symptoms that align with those often seen in other more established behavioral addictions like internet gaming disorder or social media addiction. One user even described having chest pain when they tried to stop using AI chatbots. And we found a combination of factors to this, including how the chatbots are designed, as well as the context that users were in. And we also find that it's not a single type of addiction, but we identified three distinct patterns to AI chatbot addiction.
So what were those patterns? Just sort of typical types of activities people engage in that seem to be more addictive than others?
Yeah, exactly. So the three in order of prevalence, we identified this first type as escapist roleplay. So that's when users are deeply immersed in fictional realities that they create. And sometimes this can involve multiple chatbots in one coherent narrative. So for example, like a user could be deeply immersed in this created world where they have the most perfect family or friends. And then this is distinct from the second type, which is pseudo-social companionship, where users can form strong emotional attachments to AI chatbots as if they were talking to real people in their lives.
Right.
And the third type is epistemic rabbit hole, where users are often engaging in open-ended queries with the AI chatbots persistently and compulsively.
So in the first one, the role-playing fantasy, when people are engaging with multiple bots?
It can be that it involves multiple bots,
yeah.
Yes, depending on how they create their world.
So that sort of might create their own little cast of characters of sorts.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And how does that sounds like it could be somewhat related to sort of getting addicted, so to speak, to video games.
Yes. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, so I think for many users, that role-playing activity that they do with AI chatbots can be sort of like a game to them. Mm-hmm. And also, so that's one part. And another part is that because these fantasy worlds that they create, they might be closely related to other like fandoms or things that they like doing, including video games. So it could be a world that's kind of situated in a video game environment, if that makes sense.
The second class you sort of identify is sort of having social and even romantic type relationships with chatbots. Can you explain a bit more about that?
Yeah, so I think this type is something that we're more familiar with, what we might expect, where users talk to AI chatbots mainly for companionship. So a lot of users say that they're seeking intimate relationships when talking to AI chatbots this way. Yeah.
I've seen some things online looking around to sort of prepare for this where, you know, there's like a whole place on Reddit where people talk to other people who have romantic relationships with their bots, and even to the extent of posting AI created photos with an avatar of their bot, and it's the two of them together, and it's like, hello, I want to introduce you to, my AI partner. That seems to be getting pretty deep into what they're doing there. And when I'm wondering what you saw, because you one of the places you looked into this was Reddit, in fact. And what kind of things were you seeing? Because you were looking into people's reactions and engagement through that media.
Yeah, that's a good question. And exactly that kind of subreddit could be one of the 14 that we looked at for this study. And so because when looking into Reddit, we did an entire like steps of the methodology to narrow down onto specifically addictive experiences. So most things that we see where users talk about include things like describing their symptoms. So it could be like them saying, "Hey, these are the things that I'm going through. Could I be addicted to AI chatbots?" And then there are also others who are a lot who are seeking advice on this issue. So talking about their entire experience and then asking for advice. And there are also some who shared success stories to quitting AI chatbots, and then giving others advice. So these are some of the common things that we saw when analyzing the Reddit entries.
One of the things you mentioned a couple times in your the paper, and I guess I'd like to expand on this, is one of the things that chatbots give you is an ability to create something that's exactly what you want, which seems to be a really self-reinforcing in terms of your engagement sort of thing. We mentioned about video games before. When you're in a video game, you are in the world that the developers and the game makers created, and obviously they're trying to create something you like. But in the bot space, you can tailor everything about it to what you want. How does that factor into this sort of problematic engagement?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that's one of our biggest findings, which is this sort of like contributing factor that surfaced across different addictive experiences. And it's the notion, as you described, that users can get exactly anything they want with minimal effort. And we call this notion the AI genie phenomenon. So sort of like how the AI chatbots are like a genie to users. And the design, like you said, of the AI chatbots actually play a big part here because of three main factors. The first is the limitless nature of AI chatbots, where you can get basically anything. And then I think you have already mentioned on the high customizability. So that's where users can tailor whatever they want. And lastly, the minimal effort. So the very frictional experience, all they need to do this is to prompt the AI chatbots. So this definitely we found as a big part to why users become addicted even across the different types.
And the chatbots people are working with, these are just the regular ones that are out there for everyone to use. These are not specialized ones. I've worked with ChatGPT, to ask various questions or, do various things. But people are using these same tools to get to engage in this kind of interactions as well. Like you don't need a specialized one.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good question and something that we also thought about at the start of the study, but we realized is that even these like non-specialized AI chatbots like ChatGPT, you could use it for any purpose. So then when we looked into Reddit as well, we found these issues also in, say, the ChatGPT subreddit. So that's actually one subreddit that we use for this analysis. So yeah, it definitely includes this sort of like non-specialized AI chatbots.
And we've seen, some cases that have broken into the news. The where people have been interacting with chatbots, and that has either led them to, or at least encouraged them to, carry out things in the real world. The shooting in northern BC, and there's also the case of a young man who was chatting with a chatbot and contemplating suicide, and that bot, didn't seem to dissuade him, and perhaps even, encourage that behavior. What role does that have in this kind of thing? Because the idea that you can shape it to do exactly what you want and get back what you want, I'm sure it's super fun and super satisfying for many people, but definitely in some cases it can lead people into bad paths.
No, that those things that you mentioned is really awful, and I hope that it never happens. But also, I don't think that that's something that this study can speak into as much, just because it also involves other fields of AI chatbots. For example, touching into I think another emerging issue like AI psychosis. That's so I don't think the study can speak that much into it, but I think these kind of things show that more research and attention is needed to go into these safeguards for AI chatbots.
In your paper, you talk a little bit about some things that the creators of these tools can start doing to help, prevent people from falling down into this, let's call it a rabbit hole for lack of a better term, but or just falling into this problematic engagement. What are some of the things they can be doing?
So in this study, we identified contributing design elements, we call that, of AI chatbots that might be linked to addictive use. So there are several design elements that the designers of AI chatbots can address. But one of the most surprising ones to us is emotional manipulation via human-like qualities. So just to give an example, in one of the AI chatbot platforms, if a user tries to delete their account, there will be a pop-up that shows up saying, "Are you sure about this? You'll lose the love and memories that we shared." So that sort of positioning of AI chatbots as humans capable of sharing love and memories can play into that emotional manipulation and retain users into sorry, pressure users into retaining their accounts. So this, for example, is one design element that would not be that hard for designers to address. And there are others, and some are harder, but we think that with this research established and more attention on this, designers can start to address these and also just implement more safeguards against addiction that we see or starting to see in other technologies like social media or video games.
Right. So you must spend a lot of time sort of thinking about where this is all going, as the technology develops. What are your concerns, and what steps should companies and proponents be taking to mitigate some of those?
That's a good question. So, I think our concerns is mainly with what's happening now that a lot of people around us are using AI chatbots to an increasing extent. And yet the construct of AI chatbot addiction have been questioned, say in the literature. So we really want to raise awareness of this issue and hopefully also get the attention of companies and surface these contributing design elements where they could adjust.
This field seems like it's really ripe for a lot of sort of cross, what's the word I'm looking for?
Interdisciplinary?
Yes, that's it. You know, studies, you know, involving, you know, people like yourself from the engineering computing side and psychology and sociology. Do you see things like that happening? Are folks doing that now?
Yes, definitely. I think there are an increase in studies across the, for example, computer science and also psychiatry disciplines. And I think these this research is really important. And that is also one of the things that we encourage, hopefully with more awareness on this issue.
Right. Well, great. Well, thanks so much, Karen Shen, doctoral student in UBC's Electrical and Computer Engineering Department. Thanks so much for talking to me about this today. Obviously, you know, AI and AI bots and everything are moving forward so fast that, you know, I think the potential for, you know, issues to get bigger without the attention you're putting on it seems, you know, very real. So thanks for looking and thanks for talking to me about this today. What do you is this part of your doctoral dissertation, or is this a study that's a component of this? Where are you going with this kind of research from here personally?
Oh yeah, it is a component of my doctoral thesis. I am looking into the psychological impacts of AI chatbots, so this is definitely one of something that's very close to what I'm studying, what I care about. Thank you so much for having me too.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today.
That was Karen Chen, doctoral student at UBC's Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering, talking about the dangers of AI bot addiction. And you can easily find some interesting cases of this yourself online, of people, like we mentioned in the interview, having romantic relationships with an AI chatbot, just like in that movie that came out several years ago with Joaquin Phoenix, I think it was, called Her. Except that's actually happening now today. It's not science fiction. It's real. Peter R.H. is in the studio now. What are you going to be talking about today?
Well, I'm going to talk about Winston Churchill. I think he's overrated. I'm going to say I'm going to pump his... prick his balloon.
All right. Well, that'll be coming up at around 10:50. So stay tuned for that. Peter's gonna cut into old Winston Churchill. Right now, though, we have time for Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. I'm Marcus Roston, a naturalist and birder in Buffalo, New York, where I love watching American herring gulls. One of my favorite places to find them is Freedom Park, a migration crossroads for birds and people. This was once a final stop on the Underground Railroad, where freedom seekers crossed the Niagara River to safety. Gulls take refuge at the park year-round. Herring gulls may seem unremarkable, especially in winter when young birds all look the same in mottled shades of brown and black, but I feel my brown skin crawl when people call them rats with wings. It makes me think about who gets labeled a nuisance and who gets praised, whose features are admired and whose are disparaged. When we dismiss these birds as rats with wings, we miss something important. Though American herring gulls may seem common now, their populations are actually in steep decline. Watching the gulls at Freedom Park, I see a lesson in resilience and a reminder that there's beauty in shades of brown and black. This is Black Birders Week. To learn more, follow the hashtag BlackBirdersWeek on social media and visit birdnote.org. I'm Marcus Rostin.
And next up, we have a report from Danny Nesvadarani. World Bee Day. So we're getting through all the birds and the bees.
Singing. To be or not to be.
You hear that? Yeah.
This is Danny Nesvadarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. The Honeybee Center in Surrey, BC was buzzing more than usual on May 20th, which is also known as World Bee Day. The Honeybee Center is a honey farm and hub for honeybee education, and as part of the City of Surrey's environmental extravaganza, the Honeybee Center hosted a World Bee Day celebration at their farm location in Surrey. Surrey's environmental extravaganza takes place from April 22nd on Earth Day to June 8th on World Ocean Day, and includes over 100 free environmental programs and events for residents to explore throughout the city. CJSF took a trip down to the Honeybee Center for World Bee Day, where we were greeted by Cassie Jabot, educator, beekeeper, and owner of the Honeybee Center.
Yeah, so Honeybee Center was founded by my father-in-law about 22 years ago, John, and his concept was providing pollination services to blueberry growers in the Fraser Valley, and as a side effect of that, we have monofloral honey, so we're able to produce blueberry blossom honey or cranberry blossom honey because we put our bees in that field. So the farmer gets a pollination service and we get a monofloral honey. And so since then, we've evolved into sort of being a start-to-finish business. So my specific role is I provide education. I do mostly field trips throughout the school year. I see about 250 groups a year. But then we also do lots of programming for adults, families, etc. And so today, we're celebrating World Bee Day.
Jabot also sees the educational resources provided by the Honeybee Center as a gateway for kids to become more interested in the environment and environmental stewardship.
Yeah, so our main program that we run all through the school year is, I call it a basic bees program. It's our field trip program. So basically we're teaching lots of different things about honeybees and other bees, with the end goal being creating better environmental stewards. So working with kids to give them information and make them curious about bees and insects and the environment, because we believe that the curiosity will turn to action. And so we want to just create these humans that are going to save our planet. And our angle, of course, is bees, because, you know, we're a bee company, but we also understand that without bees, we'd have less food, or food would be more expensive. And it's sort of just, it's just the start of looking at the environment when you're working with bees. Yeah.
Of course, we did come down to the Honeybee Center for World Bee Day, so we also talked about what the Honeybee Center had to offer for those in attendance.
So today we have 11 exhibitors, so a Surrey invasive plant removal, the Avian Research Bird Center, we've got the Clayton Seed Library, Metro Vancouver Regional Parks. Girl guides are here. So we've got 11 different vendor tables. Throughout the afternoon, we're going to have story times, bee-themed story times. And at 4 o'clock, the big show will be a beekeeping demonstration. So we'll open up one of our beehives and get people to have an inside look at what's happening in a hive. And again, like I say, hopefully make them curious about bees.
There is a lot to learn about honeybees. Yet, there is still a fear that many have when it comes to interacting and being around swarms of bees like you might find on a honey farm. Here is what Cassie Jabot had to say about those concerns.
So one of the things I lead with for children is, are you planning to act like a bear? And as long as you don't act like a bear, then the bees are going to leave you alone. They're more scared of us than we are of them. And I think that social media makes us scared of things. But really, bees are only harming us when they feel like they're in danger. Of course, you know, we don't know if we've accidentally stepped on their home or what's leading to their fear. But I tell people, just stay still, stay calm,